Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast about queer and Latinx topics such as
Syra and Amina from We Are Lady Parts. Those are like the most gay friends I've ever seen. Not even friends, like they can't even be friends. That's how like much they should be together.
It's like deeply romantic platonic.
Yeah,
I would say.
Like, Syra's just a little too obsessed with it. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, we'll see. We'll see season two. We're waiting for you. What up, Corona?
What's poppin', Chingona? What's good?
Not much other than what we already discussed a little bit off air, which is rain in LA. A rarity. A rarity that I adore it.
Yeah, and it's hot as fucking hell in Texas, as per usual, so nothing different or new here, just we're all slowly just dying, and not because of the weather. Anyways, that's gonna be later. But you know, also I want to say shout out to all the people in New Orleans. There, I know there's like a lot of mutual aid funds going up, so I'm sure we can post some. Just love to New Orleans right now. Everyone in Louisiana, anyone affected by the hurricane. We all know we live in a piece of shit country that doesn't give a fuck about anybody, so we have to help each other. So, you know, just sending love to everybody who's in the Gulf or affected by anything right now. So, fuck.
Yeah, definitely. That's hard. I mean, yeah, people, you know, don't always have the resources, and it sucks. It sucks a lot.
Yeah, just sending love to them. And if y'all guys got $5 to buy a drink, you can send $5 to a mutual aid fund and to help anybody affected by the hurricane. So it's just love, and I hope everybody's okay, because it's really fucked up. And it's been heavy on my side, dude. Like, I've been went to like a COVID funeral, and that was depressing. So everyone needs this episode right now, including me.
Yeah, okay, well, you're right. We should try to make this a little more like escapey. Let's get out of the negative stuff, because there's a lot. It's a lot. It's every day. Like, not even getting into what's going on overseas, but geez.
Yeah.
Everything's been heavy. A lot. It's been a heavy month. Sorry. We've been gone for a month, and, you know, the world is a lot, and sometimes TV can't save us. We're going to try to get saved by TV right now.
Yeah, we're trying.
It's helped me a lot today. I'll say that. So hopefully you guys enjoy the stuff that we talk about.
But on a happy, lighter note, we have both been watching The L Word. Oh, man. This isn't something we take lightly, but we are watching it. And
I don't know why. Like, don't judge us yet. We'll explain later.
Look. Everyone's going through a hard time. Like, the pandemic did not stop. So, yes, we are watching The L Word again in 2021.
It was a little bit of a shock watching The L Word after spending so many weeks obsessed with Nevertheless, which is
my God. You know, that has really helped me out for eight weeks, I believe. Was it eight episodes?
I don't know. But God.
Who are we?
It's actually ridiculous, like, the complete difference, because... You know, L Word is like a inundation of all that is lesbian and gay and queer women. And then there's like Nevertheless, where it's like eye contact and a handhold. Maybe.
And if y'all don't know what we're talking about Nevertheless. It's a K-drama that you can watch on Netflix. There's eight episodes. And we're going to be talking about Seuljuan real quick, because we have been obsessed. Shout out to everyone that introduced me to it on Twice Twitter, on my stan account. Shout out to all the Twice stans that are also Seuljuan stans to this day. So shout out to y'all. I love that show, and I love Seuljuan so fucking much.
Can you really say that you love that show? We didn't really watch that
show.
No,
Seuljuan. I didn't say I like Nevertheless.
You kind of almost did, but yeah, like, when it comes to this show, you don't, I mean, I don't watch much more than the scenes between Yoon Sol and Jiwon, who are like, you know, they're like the two girls that I feel like, I don't know, I don't watch a lot of K-drama, but I feel like there's probably always this couple that everybody's like, they should be together, and then they don't end up together. And then Sol Jiwon became like, or that's their ship name, they kind of became this like ray of sunlight in that world where like, maybe it will. This will finally happen.
Yeah, finally. And then for it to be done in a K-drama where like, you know, they don't do this gay shit over there. Like, it's super, it's still a very conservative society. So for them to even acknowledge that these two characters were in love with each other just like blew my mind. And like, the fact that like literally no one was watching it for the straight lead, because like no one cared about them. And if you listen to our Patreon, which you can subscribe to, so you can hear more feelings about Sol Jiwon.
Really get into it.
No one cared about them, and no one was interested in their characters. Like everyone literally was just like scroll, scroll, scroll. Wait, is that Sol and Jiwon? Pause. Scroll, scroll, scroll. Wait, Sol and Jiwon? Pause. And that always totaled up to like 2 minutes per episode, and at most maybe 6 minutes. Oh my god, we were living in those 6 minutes
episodes.
Woo! We were being fed. We had like a whole loaf of bread. Not even loaf.
I felt so like blessed, and then I watched like one episode of Elra and I was like, oh right.
this is how it should be.
Fuck, okay.
I mean, I don't know, like I love a slow burn best friends to lovers like trope. Yes. Like
oh my god. And I love like a just repressed fucking like super slow burn, like take 10 episodes to hold hands, it's fine.
Yeah, because like we all know that like the best part of all like lesbian dramas or queer couples is just like them getting together. That's the most fun. Once they're together, it's like, okay, great, now they're gonna be boring. Unless you're on the L word, which apparently everyone's just
the drama never stops. Everybody fucks everybody.
And I feel like that's more true this season. But
Jesus fucking Christ.
It's a fucking mess. But like nevertheless, yeah. It's like it feeds my soul, gives me wholesome queer people vibes, and like
so it was a miniseries, huh? Like it's just never going back.
I mean, I think, yeah, it's like how novelas are in Mexico, I think. I don't know. I've only
Except
seen two novelas.
8 episodes, yeah.
2K dramas, my bad, that are like one and done. And
oh my god, speaking of novelas, I can't believe you did this to me on a fucking Wednesday or yes. Thursday last week. I spent like 2 entire days watching clips on YouTube of a fucking novela called I don't even remember, like Trampas del Deseo or something.
Trampas
shit, like,
del Deseo.
Is that what it's called? I was just fucking throwing shit out there.
No, but
that was what were their fucking name? Jews, oh, always God. Something like
Patricia and like
something with a J. Luciana.
Yeah, Patricia and Luciana or Lucia, something
Lucia,
like that.
Lucia, there you go. Some shit like that.
But wasn't it appropriate? Because they were both grown women in their, like,
yeah,
40s.
They were.
Mwah, we love it.
I could not believe my eyes.
I'm telling you, they let this on TV? Like, how?
Yeah, some of that shit was like, what am I watching right now? Holy shit. I just, it's just,
like,
it.
On TV.
It shocks me more and more every day.
And the
what
fact
is
that it's like
novelas.
What, 6-7 years old?
Because I was used to like that last one that I watched because of you.
Las Aparicio?
No. After that, with
the one you Juliantina.
Juliantina, yeah, that
oh,
one.
Oh, that's
was
nothing.
Like,
that was like
so repressed
cute.
In comparison.
It was so
yeah,
cute.
It was like nevertheless to L word like. This
exactly.
shit was graphic.
It was like it was almost like the L word, like
once again, we did not watch the whole show, just
their
scenes. So when it came to just their scenes,
it wasn't crumbs either. They weren't they were like main parts of the story. Because
how do you know? How do we know that? Because I feel like sometimes I would accidentally watch some of the main story, and I was like, who the fuck are these people? I don't know who any of these people are.
I think you're right. But they had a very well-written story, and they really took it there. Like, the things
they
were talking about.
Dark sometimes.
really, but like, I really enjoyed that they had really honest conversations. Like, a lesbian definitely had real
chemistry. I think the one that played
real Lucia, chemistry.
I thought, oh my the god, one the that blonde. Played, yeah, I thought she, I think in real life she might be queer. Like, actually, like,
it, you know, if she's not queer in real life publicly, then I'm like, sure she is looks privately.
Because in that show, she's very like high femme, and like from what I saw, a couple of pictures, I was like, that's a stem.
She's top. She gives top energy. Yeah. Like, she may be the femme, but she is the top, and she has the top energy. I was just like, oh my god. She's so much experience in this. Like, how did she know to do that? She knows.
Yeah, that girl belongs on the L word, low-key. Stop talking about the L word, Maite. Jesus fucking Christ. Okay.
I know. Look at us. We keep going back to it. I'm sorry, y'all. Like, we grew up with it, and we know it wasn't good, but there was nothing else.
But yeah.
I did. I would watch it on YouTube in five parts when it came out on Sunday, and then I watch it, like, on Friday, and I
catch
up. That
was not me.
No commercials.
I was playing catch up with that damn show.
Oh, YouTube didn't have commercials back then. That's how long ago I started watching the L word. Oh, God. Gross. But anyways, yeah. What did you think of... aren't you glad you watched it?
I mean, I guess. I don't know. It just kind of took over my life for a little bit. But now I'm out of my shame circle. And I've also ended up watching... There's a show called Brand New Cherry Flavor on Netflix. That was kind of a fucking fever dream, a mixture between like horror and like fucking, I don't even know. It's very LA. The lead is like a bisexual Brazilian woman. And it was intense. It was actually probably one of the like most graphically gross shows I've seen in my life. And it was just weird, but I also couldn't look away. It was really weird.
To think, like, how gross on a scale of like one to like.
It was disgusting. I could not Bill like
blood or like.
No. It wasn't gory in the traditional like slashing people's throats type of way. It was gross in like a giving birth to a cat out of your mouth type of way.
What? What?
Yeah.
Okay, you have my interest now. Now I'm gonna watch this shit.
It's gross, but I watched the whole thing. It was interesting. It was very like, here's a curse, you know, like, let's have revenge on gross white men type of thing.
Oh, cool. That's always a favorite theme of ours.
And then I also binged the last season of Shameless, which was interesting. I was very invested in the Debbie storyline.
I am coming out as a not a Shameless supporter. I've tried. I've really tried. I've watched multiple episodes, and I tried to force myself to like it, and it just wasn't for me.
Maybe that's the thing that I didn't grow up with it. It hasn't been out that long, but I've been watching it since the beginning. I feel like I've been watching this for 10 years, so I'm so invested. Like, you know, there's 11 seasons. Wow.
Okay, no wonder.
I've been watching these kids turn to adults. It's like, I'm very invested in like the ups and the downs. And this episode was so heavy on talking about like gentrification and Black people being pushed out of neighborhoods. Like, it was so focused on all these like current woke things. It was pandemic.
And out there in Chicago. Wait, they're talking about the pandemic?
Yeah, it was current with the pandemic.
Oh, so, no, I don't want to see that.
someone dies of COVID. I won't say who, but somebody.
Oh, man. Like, yeah, I don't. Nope.
It was a lot.
I tried. Love to y'all that love it.
It's not for you, but it's fine. I just had to finish it. I had to see it through, and it was heavy. It was a lot.
You remind me of that TikTok. I had to see it through, my boy. I had to see it through. Oh my god. No, dude. You got me on Modern Love.
Yeah, don't even say it that way, because I've seen one entire episode of that entire show.
Oh, really? Anne Hathaway is in another episode. There's like, I know, three episodes, like, chock full
of like celebrities in the first season, right? Mm-hmm. I just watched one episode, and it was because of the obvious, you know, gay lesbians. Yeah.
I thought the episode was really cute, but I was really concerned for the hygiene of everyone involved. I was just like, it looks like everyone's running like miles and it's hot.
I can't believe that's your only take from it.
It's my main takeaway. I'm just like, do these people bathe? Like, does anyone shower? Like, they just, like, why is she so sweaty? Why is everybody so sweaty?
She's like a teenager. You know, teenagers are just like, whatever, you know what I mean? I
don't That's know. True, but like, don't you want to smell good for your crush? Like, I would want to smell good for my crush. If I knew I was gonna see my crush, I'd shower the moment before.
This is episode 5 of season 2. It's called Am I dot 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 question mark? Maybe this quiz will tell me. And this girl keeps taking these quizzes
on BuzzFeed. Like,
yeah, to like figure out what is her sexuality, and the quiz keeps getting it wrong because it's a fucking BuzzFeed quiz. But she keeps taking it, trying to like change the answer, you know what I mean? Oh, it's middle school. It's not even high school, it's middle school. And
the child needs to bathe.
she meets a girl. It's cute.
It's really adorable. Actually, like, it was really realistic and cute. I recommend it to everyone. It was like the most adorable little story of like inappropriate.
It was such a vibe.
It was appropriate. Like, I thought it was cute. But, yes, I was mainly concerned and mainly thinking about the truth that white people don't bathe. So I was just like, oh, no, it's true. Like, here it is.
Oh, my God.
Like, she's sweaty. Like, I'm like, you poor thing. Like, they made you run between scenes, didn't they? Like, I'm like, oh, my God. Poor thing. She's running.
I thought that you would find, I thought you would vibe with it.
Because
of the whole not sexualizing kids thing, like, this was just like coming of age cute.
Yeah, and I love the appropriateness of it. Like, they weren't being weird with the kids, and they looked like kids. It wasn't gross, it wasn't weird, it was just like awkward, and like they act like kids because that's what kids are. They're freaking squinklers, they're dumb. So they're doing really good at actually showing children as children and just letting them be that and not giving us more, because we don't need that shit. It's gross. So shout out to Amazon Prime. Ew, Jeff Bezos? No.
Ew,
gross.
No, stop. Anyways, Amazon Prime, Modern Love, season 2, episode 5.
Okay. Oh, my God. Yeah. Anyways.
Well, moving on to the actual topics of the show after this very long banter that was kind of needed because it's been a while.
It's been a while, y'all. So what are we covering today, Maite? What are we covering?
Oh, I'm going to be covering a little show by the name of We Are Lady Parts.
Oh, so exciting.
But first, you're going to talk about your show because we always go chronologically, and I believe this came out first.
Yes, it did. This came out 2020, apparently. So I'll be covering Shiva Baby. And if y'all don't know, this shit's like uncut gems for gays, and now Maitha knows what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Wasn't it?
Stressed, though.
It was like, I can't even begin to explain how like anxious it made me feel the very first time I watched it. I was almost relieved at the end.
How many times,
like,
have you seen this?
Oh my god. I've only seen it one time through all the way because I get anxiety. I'm an anxious bitch, so like just watching it that one time was like, I'm good. And then other times I'll watch like the first half and then I'll do something else and I come back and finish it. So I think I've seen it 3 times. Like usually distracted while I'm at work. But today I couldn't finish it, the rewatch, because I was getting anxious. And I was like, no, I can't do this today. Like, the moment, like, a character walked in, I just was like, I can't do this. This is making me, So to explain it better, Shiva Baby is written and directed by Emma Sigelman. She actually based the movie off a short that she did in her last year at in NYU, and she touched on some kind of interesting things. Of course, this whole movie is based around a Shiva. And if you don't know what a Shiva is, it's like the 7 days after someone dies, a Jewish person dies, kind of like how Mexicans pray for like 7 days straight. They kind of do the same thing. They have 7 days of mourning and prayer. And so this is kind of like a wake. Someone has passed, and then everyone goes over for, like, you know, chopped liver. Menudo. Menudo, you know, pastries.
Recalentado.
You know, everyone gets together. And it's cool because my only funeral experiences are actual Shivas and Mexican funerals. And from my experience of going to multiples of both, is that they're very much alike. It's 7 days of mourning, and everyone's just kind of getting together to talk shit about each other, basically. So it's not really different. It's exactly the same. You're eating some food. The food is different, but you're eating some food and you're talking shit about family members, and they're right there in front of you. So it's a weird, awkward, forced family time, and this character is being forced. and I think that adds another layer of claustrophobia, is this, like, you can't escape this house, because the whole movie's, like, based just around the Shiva, and everyone's just in the same location. I think it only starts off in one other location, and I'll get to that in a second. It stars Rachel Sennett. She plays Danielle. She's the lead. She is a soon-to-be graduated NYU grad. She's going to the Shiva and with her parents, Miss Polly Draper, Daniel's mother, Miss Debbie, and her father, which he's a white man. We don't name them. He's cool. I love him, though. He's in a lot of things.
I feel
things.
Like he's like the stereotypical Jewish dad in everything, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
I've seen him in so many things.
He's great, though. I really love him. He's kind of one of the more notable actors in this. So if you see him, you've seen him before.
Not for me. For me, it was a different one, but go on.
Oh, there's someone else we recognize. Danny DeFerry's Max. He is an NYU kept husband and sugar daddy to Danielle. You open up to that scene, so it's not a spoiler. And then there's Diana Agron, who plays Kim. She is the wife of said sugar daddy, and she is hashtag girl boss.
That's like a little bit of a spoiler, I feel like. That was quite a reveal for me.
Oh. Well, here you are, y'all. But that's not even what's important. Like, the movie isn't really that, you know, these people are like, surprise, surprise. It's more like every moment is another moment of something terrible happening to this character, Danielle, and I love it. And then we have Miss Molly Gordon, who plays Maya, her ex-girlfriend, who she took to prom with.
Babe!
And apparently you recognize her from...
She's on Booksmart. She's Triple A.
Triple A, the girl that gives everyone a ride?
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't understand. I don't remember her.
Her actual name, it starts with an A. I forgot what it is, too, but... But I went on the IMDb, and it literally says Triple A as her name on there.
Triple A!
Yeah, because doesn't mean that's... Yeah, it sucks. Like, watch Booksmart and you'll get what I'm talking about. But yeah. She's so fucking funny, and I never thought I would be blessed to see her in a role like this. So I was very excited. Chef's super fucking kiss, yeah.
Yeah, she's amazing in this, and her role grows. And we'll talk about that when I spoil more of this on accident. So one of the best things about this movie, it's his ability to hold tension throughout the entire goddamn thing. And what I mean by uncut gems for gays is that she's kind of thrown in to the Shiva right after you see her, and it begins as her being a sex worker. She's a sugar baby. And all of a sudden, she's thrown into the reality of her life, which is a very different reality than the one she's curated outside of her family. And I think that's a really interesting tension. You know, she's a sex worker who is babysitting that her parents know of. She's babysitting. And she sees her sugar daddy at the Shiva. And that's not even where the tension begins. The tension begins immediately with her parents. And the direct, like, difference between her private life and this her family life, who she is. They very much treat her like a child. They're very much using this opportunity, the Shiva's network opportunity, for her to get a job. They barely know the person that passed. They are seriously there just to network and get this girl a future. And for them to mingle, I guess, with everyone that their extended family, so they can get somebody in their extended family to get this girl a job. But as you go in, you see Danielle sees Maya, her ex-girlfriend. She sees a lot of awkward conversations she's trying to escape about her future, her lack of maturity, that her parents see her as still like this little girl. and yet at the same time she's very much not a little girl. She's a fully realized like sexual being at this point, but no one around her is really seeing that except this grown ass weird man and Maya, of course, who actually sees her from the very beginning and sees through Danielle's reasoning for being there from the jump. Danielle is questioning her, like, what are you really doing here? What's up with this? I haven't seen you in forever. Why are you here? And I feel like that's kind of like a...
that's like opening banter, dude. That opening banter between, like... That's when I fell in love with this movie, is, like... Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you start off with her talking to her, like, sugar daddy or whatever you want to call him. He's, like, he's a douchebag, right? Like,
he sucks.
He has this whole, like, little spiel about, oh, I'm so happy to be helping a female. It's like she's a full human woman in front of you and you're calling her a female and generalizing her. But anyways, like, we move forward and we finally get to the first person who, like, gives her shit but in a fun, playful way after her parents, after this dude. And she gets to Maya, who's just, like, you know, like, meeting her and matching her in this, like, amazing dialogue of, like, oh yeah, well, were you at the funeral? Then what was your favorite part? And then back and forth.
What's your favorite part of the funeral? Who asked that? Like, I love that.
Yeah, and then, like, you can just, I don't know, the connection and the chemistry and, like, the history is so immediately there.
Yeah.
And I love it. It's vibey.
And you can see from the jump that this character actually sees through Danielle and sees her. She's not, like, seeing this idea of her being sexualized. She doesn't see her as a child. She sees her as she is. She's just like, bitch, I see you. I know what you're doing here. And I'm not gonna, like, duh. Like, I know you. And I really love that. And the dialogue is another thing that's keeping the tension between all of these characters. Because between the mom, the father, being just... It's like almost they're talking over her and you see it from her point of view. Everything that's being said to her, being told to her. And I
they
love that
they blur them out.
Yeah.
Like, they have her in focus and then they have the people next to her, behind her, just talking up a storm. And you're supposed to be paying attention, but it's hard to because you're just paying attention to her face because it's in focus and they're not. It was really interestingly shot.
It was like anxiety, like the movie. Like, that's what...
Yeah.
Do you want to know what it's like to be anxious? Exactly this movie. I'm like, I didn't need it because I knew I felt it double. But this is a perfect example of how people feel anxious. And any, like, that's anxiety. Like, people are just talking to you and you're just like, I can't even fathom. You're just saying another thing to add on another layer of bullshit of me. Like, I can't do this. And I think as the movie progresses, characters introduced... Kim is introduced, and the best part about when Diana Argon comes onto screen is, like, the face acting that she's doing, because, like, there's a lot happening that they can't say to each other, because she's understanding something in that moment, in that conversation. She sees a bracelet, she sees the way her husband is acting, and all of a sudden, like, something's connecting in her mind, and you know it's connected, Danielle knows it's connected. The husband knows it's those, you know, the dots are connected, you know? So she is understanding something about their dynamic that they're not saying because, you know, duh. Even though she's a girl boss and annoying, which is another running joke. I think Kim is like the direct contrast of Danielle, right? Like, Kim is like this girl boss. Kim has like
a
family.
That's what you think.
She's, yeah, but, you know, she, even though she has all these things that society deems a woman is supposed to have, she's still in this shitty relationship with this trash ass man. And she's the one maintaining his lifestyle. So I think.
But to get a little spoilery, I think I think what they were insinuating was that these two met, like her and her husband met, the same way that the main character and him met. They're insinuating that she was also a sugar baby.
Really?
You never got that?
I didn't get that because I didn't.
Yeah,
that's smart.
Like,
explain this to us and the
listeners.
That's why.
Sorry, super spoilery, but like that's why at the end when she realized she like she's making connections. Yes, but so is the main character. God, what's her name again?
Danielle.
Danielle. Danielle's making the connections too because she's like questioning her. She's like, how long have you been together and how are you able to start all these business? How were you able to do all this? And it's because it was funded by this dude and she like has put on this face of like this, you know, I'm funding his career. I'm the entrepreneur here. I work from home now. And she's just like, how are you able to work from home? She's putting together the dots that this girl like, it's just like her. But but he's just never stopped going on those websites and like finding sugar babies. Like, they're insinuating that she just like moved on, but that's where it all started. That's why she was questioning her back. That's why there was that back and forth.
Whoa. Mind the fireworks blown. Are going off in my mind. See, this is why I love it when you watch them too, because I'm like, whoa, I didn't connect that dot. I was just so anxious in that moment. I was freaking out. Like,
yeah, it's like, but you're right. Like, the first part of it, like, even Maya is like, what, Malibu Barbie? You don't think Malibu Barbie's hot?
Yeah, and she's, and Maya sees through all the bullshit the entire time. Like, there is no bullshitting Maya, because Maya knows Danielle. And their connection is real. It's not something based on, like, money. It's not something based on power. It is a very true, like, more than,
it's outside,
like,
of expectations, right?
Yes,
like,
yeah.
One of the first things that Danielle's mom says is, like, no funny business with Maya. And she's immediately yeah. like, what does that mean, huh? What does that mean?
Immediately, you're like, gay. Like, okay. So, apparently, she had taken her to prom. They went together because they were dating, right?
I guess so, yeah.
That's her ex-girlfriend. That's what I assumed.
That whole moment, I was just like, how is this gonna come out, right? Because I'm expecting, like, this fully, like, deeply closeted thing. And it kind of is, but it's also kind of not, because of the way that, like, Maya, like, ends up bursting out with the whole, yeah, and then afterwards we fucked and she orgasmed for the first time. I was like, what is going on right now? I was dying.
Wildin'. I was like, who says that? Who says that in front of their mom?
Queen. Well, it was in front of just the guy, not in front of everybody.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't rewatch this today, y'all. I wasn't trying
to. Yeah, yeah. No, there's so much that goes on that if I hadn't just watched it like 4 hours ago, yeah, it's hard.
You'd
it's
missed
a lot
it.
To miss.
No, it's amazing. It's amazing. Like, as each thing is introduced, you're more and more like on the edge of your seat. Like, oh my God, how is she going to get out of this alive? And the truth is that, like, all these things are really just like minor in the grand scheme of like life, you know?
You know, because another comparison to Mexican culture is one thing that stood out to me above everything. Like, as much as I want to say that, like, it was the queerness that really drew me in, there was this other side thing that went on from start to finish in this damn show.
Oh, I think I know what you're going to say.
Everyone
right?
fucking
okay.
always talking about this girl and, like, oh, you're not eating enough. Oh, you mm-hmm. used to be so chubby. Oh, you lost so much weight. Oh, like,
oh, you're anorexic. Oh, you're so
yeah,
big.
Like, comment after comment. Like, never could they stop talking about, no, like,
her
people
weight
that
was just
her
fair
weight
game.
Was front and center. And, like, you know, like, they're always just talking about it. And if she's eating, it's a problem. If she's not eating, it's a problem. Like,
oh,
it was
my
one of the
God,
very first things that I noticed. She would put this food on her plate and, like, out of nervousness, and then she would just put it all back. And then she would, whenever she was really going through it, like, she was hitting, like, her peak, like, she would go and eat, you know, like, and then.
And she's just vegetarian and she was eating meat.
And then she would eat, like, a bagel with lox and capers. Yeah, like, it was just, you know, her relationship with food was even, like, a whole side story. Like, you can make a fucking short film out of that. So that was interesting too, and that's how fucking Mexican families are. Like, if you lost weight, if you gained weight, if you didn't change your weight, they're gonna talk about it.
Oh, they love fucking talking about it. And
you could,
like,
tell
that's
it was just like it was a whole thing, and you could tell she's been working on deflecting this shit for her whole life. And it was another thing too that I guess I kind of like added to me a layer for me with Maya. Because, you know, they talk about her being chubby not that long ago, and they use that word a lot, chubby. And to me, in my mind, I'm like, okay, so timeline wise to me, that says that Maya likes her now and Maya liked her even before
then.
Too and I'm like, like, I love that, you know?
Yeah, no, there's, I mean, again, Danielle's awesome, and that's another, like, contrasting characters, right? Like, there's Kim, who's completely different from Danielle, and then there's Maya, who is, like, self-assured. She's on her right track in her career. She's confident. She's friends with all the old people at this Shiva. She's cool
her
with them, like,
real.
Genuinely cool
is...
with them.
Her mom is just like, stop, go, where are you going? Her mom is so controlling.
Stop being
though.
Gay.
Basically, like, where
and
have you been?
Care.
I was helping the old lady. Like, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, like, and Maya doesn't give a fuck. She's like, whatever. I don't care. I'm going to be as gay as I want. Walk away from me. and I love that because I feel like Danielle does need someone who is, like, secure in themselves and sees through all of it. Just knows, like, hey, there's something wrong with you. And I can see it. There are some really touching moments that I thought redeemed the mom character for me. Because throughout the movie, like, the mom, although she was another like huge tension, another thing that made me very anxious throughout the movie, because you know, mommy issues, I love you, mom. but she, at the end, I felt like she did see Danielle and she did understand everything that had been happening. But I think she was doing what moms do, lo que se ve no se pregunta, and there was a lot that she could see, so there was a lot of things that I don't think she wanted to ask. And I like that there was a depth to the mother character. Like, she wasn't just another point of anxiety that I feel like at the end she kind of understood and forgave her daughter, even. Because I feel like she picked up on all of it. Am I alone in this? Do you think she picked up on it?
I think, I don't know, I guess I never fully saw her as, like, a complete enemy. I think I saw her, like, on, like, walking a line a lot, right?
Yeah,
you see Maya's mom being very overtly like, stay away from Danielle.
Yeah,
but you see her, like, Danielle's mom say things like, oh, you know, I'm very open-minded, but also no funny business. Like, she walks the line of like, oh, you should really get a job, but oh, she's great, she's doing this great program at school. Like, she's just walking the line of like supportive and like, you know, whatever. And
critical.
That's why
supportive,
Danielle,
and critical, supportive, yeah, and critical.
That's why Danielle at the end or towards the end is like, you know, like, are you disappointed in me or this and that?
Yeah.
And the mom, like, ultimately chooses to be, you know, to care about her daughter, like, instead of what her daughter does.
Yeah. And I think that's something that that character had overcome in that short span of time. But I felt like she did great. And I thought that was really touching. I thought that was really, like, a great emotional thing to do. And then, can we spoil it? Can we talk about the gay stuff?
We've been spoiling it for, like,
okay,
the last
10 minutes. Yeah. When Maya and Danielle finally kiss, like, don't you... to me, it felt like that's when kind of the tension was just, like, gone.
Yeah, that was a nice... Well, you know... And
the
just
awkwardness,
like I said,
was there, but the tension was gone. Like,
but their,
it continued
their
being
banter
awkward.
Is unmatched, right? Because they go back and forth about these minuscule things, like, well, I replied to your story, well, and you didn't write back, well, no one replies to stories. And then, like, the final thing that Maya says that gets Danielle to cross the way and kiss her is like, well, be different, be someone, like, be different than other people, you know. And she's like, okay, fine, goes for it. And so I just think she challenges her and like a good way,
healthy way.
Yeah, whereas everybody else just challenges her.
Correct. It makes her more anxious, I felt like, with them. The and then the very ending scene, oh my god, talk about like never-ending awkwardness. Like, the whole getting into the van, I was just like, oh,
I never
god.
Knew you could like write 10 pages of dialogue and action surrounding just getting everybody into a van. A bunch of people who should not be in a van together, for one.
No.
And then I was waiting for it to, like, all blow up and go to shit. Like, in that moment, I was like, something's about to fucking go nuts right now because they're all stuffed in this fucking van. And then it just turns really fucking sweet.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It was so cute. Like, the ending for me was, like, everything I wanted. I was like, well, not everything I wanted, but it was so cute to me. Because the movie ends with Danielle and Maya holding hands.
And then just smiling.
And smiling. And it's, like, so cute because they're in this van of, like, her sugar daddy, his wife, your mom and dad bickering literally nonstop. Another
Some
lady.
Random old lady.
Who doesn't want to be there either. She's just like, oh, my God.
And it's,
like
stuffed.
Here.
Stuffed as hell.
Stuffed. They take, like, literally like 5 minutes just to get in the car, and they're so insistent and it's so nonstop. And oh, I'm so glad it ended like that, because oh my god, if it ended in the van, like, just like that.
But and then the other girl's mom too is in there, I think.
It was like 12 people,
and then a baby, a crying
and a
baby.
Like,
the crying baby throughout the film was probably the most anxiety inducing part for me.
Oh my god, it felt too real. I was just like, oh my god, like, that's what I'm getting anxious thinking about it. Like, that's
another reason that I think Kim was like a part of that, because she was doubting the whole time that she was a babysitter. She's like, oh yeah, hold a baby, see you at, you know, she was challenging her because she knew who she, like, what she was doing, and she knew where she came from because she also came from there.
See, I didn't connect that dot, and I'm so glad you did, so that I wouldn't have to, because I couldn't take another thing. I was like, this is too much. But
I don't know. Like, it didn't break up their fucking family, you know? She was fully accepting of it.
Yeah, it was awkward, but she didn't seem that upset. She was just like, well, we're going to fight about this later, but not right now. Like,
yeah.
What? This is the greatest dysfunctional ass like family I've seen. Oh my god. Like, I was so glad. And it only ran for 117 minutes. So it's like what? Less than 2 hours?
Wait, no, 117? I think it's 1 hour and 17 minutes.
Oh, you're right. An hour and 17
minutes. 77 minutes, yeah.
77. Yeah, like, oh, there was
very short. Very, yeah, very short.
And thank God it's short, because I couldn't handle that movie being 2 hours long. Like, it was a ride I didn't know I was going to go on. Like, I had no idea what this movie was going to do until I saw it. So I'm going to give this movie like 4.5 panluces. Just because the anxiety added a great layer, but it also made me anxious. So I don't know. I have to minus the 5 because I was freaking out the whole time.
It left me wanting more. So for that, I'm going to say no cafecitos. But I have to know, what is this HBO deal that they have?
Yeah, so she's making an HBO comedy. And I think she's also making a movie with the lead from Shiva Baby. So she has two things going on. One of them is about a fight club to lose their virginity, and I think that's Bottoms, and it's a movie.
Okay.
Yeah, strange, but I'm there. And then there's another one called it's a half hour show about sugar babies called Sugar, and it's about sugar babies.
I wonder if they'll bring in Skate Kitchen and Betty, if they'll do a Shiva Baby and this new half hour.
I hope so. I heard it got canceled, and I want to be sad.
Yeah, R.I.P. Betty season 2.
Our favorite slice of life show that had nothing to do with anything. It was just good.
So good.
Loved it. But yeah, so y'all go watch Shiva Baby. It's on HBO Max right now, and I think you can rent it. I think you can watch it on Amazon Prime and also rent it if you want to give Jeff Bezos some money. You don't have to. but yeah, go watch it for yourself. It's a cute, fast watch. It will give you anxiety. But it's good. That's a good thing. It's amazing that it can do that. So shout out to this first-time director. She's doing that shit. So hopefully she gives us some more accurate Jewish depictions of life. Like, I really love it when people tell their own stories and they go for it. They really go for it, because all I saw was bagels, and it looked like I saw some chopped liver. You know, I've been to some shivas. I know what they about. Okay, I didn't see no praying happening at this shiva, but that's okay. They was networking. Same difference. But what are you gonna be talking about today?
I'm gonna be talking about We Are Lady Pots, a British show.
Bad bitches, I love them.
It's on Peacock. It's a Peacock original, I think, technically.
Also a Channel 4 original. If y'all know, the UK is just making good shit, and they always put it on Channel 4 over there. I love
it. You know. It's created by Nita Manzoor. Nita was actually raised in a Muslim and very musical family. But funnily enough, she majored in politics before she started pursuing filmmaking. All of those things together make so much fucking sense when you see We Are Lady Parts.
It's so
like
smart.
All of those things are in the show. This show is her. Even the songs in the show that are like original songs that the band plays, they're fucking amazing, and they were co-written by her and her siblings, which I think is really, really cool.
Can we say the name of one of them? I thought it was just really clever.
Yeah, you can say that. Yeah, I looked it up on Spotify. Lady Parts is a band on there, and you can listen to all their songs on there. I love all the songs. There's 4 songs and then 1 cover song.
Oh my god. Well, but which one did you like? My headscarf.
Voldemort Under My Headscarf. So good. If you can't already tell, like, this is a show about Muslim women, a group of them who are in a band, and they're going against all the stereotypes. Starting with who I guess is pretty much the main character, Amina. She's a girl on a mission. She's working on her PhD in microbiology, and that's somehow just like a side thing that she has going on. it's not even a main thing. Yeah, like it's just a thing she does during the day. You know, when it comes to content about Muslim women, you often see like the concept that they're forced into these arranged marriages and all this like really basic shit that people think, and that they want out, or that they're having some sort of identity crisis. But in Amina's case, her parents don't care if she tries to get a husband. They're like way more relaxed about everything in general in comparison to their daughter. You know, she wears a hijab and she watches her language. Her mom doesn't. You know, Amina's true love is playing the guitar and music, but she hides it and she plays it down because it's haram. But her mom encourages her to play music. She loves it. And so does her dad. And she's also, you know, you just see her for the most part, especially at the beginning, she's so desperate to get a husband. And, you know, you kind of realize at the end, towards like later in the show, you're like, if she just chilled out and stopped worrying about it so much, it would probably happen for her. She'd probably find like the man that she wants.
Exactly, the man that she wants.
And she kind of just gets in her own way. But funnily enough, her, who tries to be like blend in and, you know, especially with her like particular crew of friends outside of the band, she kind of ends up being the odd one out in her band of weirdos and lady parts. So that's pretty fun. The next person that I'm going to talk about before I get into the whole plot line is the kind of like the leader of the group, the band, I should say, which is Syra. And she dresses really gay and she has like a vibe, you know, and the whole time I was waiting for her to like come out. But she's actually with like this dude in her own little anti-patriarchy way, because she's like fully on our wave, you know what I mean? Like, she's like sitting proof that gender expression is not sexuality, because, you know, the tattoos, the baggy clothes, the short hair, like, that's just for us to admire, as it turns out.
They subverted that trope as well. I love it.
Yeah. The other three members, they don't get quite as much of their lives explored, but, you know, here's hoping for a season two so we can get to know a little bit more about them, including the queer babe of my dreams, Aisha. She's like this badass who's got like a tough exterior. Like, she seems kind of angry all the time. She comes off as like really mean. So that's, you know, that's my personal favorite because that's my type. And she also writes the lyrics for the band, and these lyrics and these names of the songs are kind of like meant to get a reaction to people by playing off of their own misconceptions of Muslim women. So there's names like "Ain't No One Gonna Honor Kill My Sister But Me," the one that you mentioned earlier, "Voldemort Under My Headscarf." Like, you know, all of them are along that line of like saying wild shit that people try to use to offend them, but then they're turning it around, you know, and speaking their own truths. She's also an Uber driver on the side, and she's the drummer because, of course, you know, she just had to win me over. And then there's like the actual most stable one of the band.
Yeah.
She comes complete with a family. Her name's Bisma. She's the bassist in the band, and her husband kind of end up pushing Syra a lot in her own relationship because they're kind of like very nuclear family, very like, you know, the man works and she doesn't, but like she has her own shit going on. Her backup vocals are my fucking favorite. She can like scream some stuff. Yeah, she's great. And then last but definitely not least, there's Momtaz, or Taz. She's this badass pothead who wears a niqab, but she's not stripped of her personality by any means.
Not at all.
She's just as hardcore as the other bandmates.
And she sells lingerie.
Bro. She what?
She sells lingerie.
Yeah, she sells lingerie to, like, I love it. Yeah, to like these old like Muslim women, and she curses. She's like a social media pro. She's the band manager, and she, you know, she's trying to take the band to the next level. She kind of does that by bringing in this influencer Zarina, So this is when we're gonna start to get a little bit spoilery. Like, by now you know there's a band, there's a Muslim women who are, none of them are fucking stereotypes, and yeah, you should watch the show Peacock Original. It's on there. It's not that expensive.
It's the best thing I've seen. It's honest. It's Channel 4. They kill it every time. Every time.
Killing it. Okay. I've watched it through twice now, and each time I'm just like sitting at the edge of my seat laughing.
Laughing out loud, dude. I'm at the gym just like cackling to myself. And I'm like, oh, so well, good. Here we are in public again.
But yeah, let's get a little spoilery. Okay. So I sent this to you probably a couple of months ago at least.
You sure did.
When Aisha first sees Zarina.
The song.
The song Chabela. Paloma Negra by Chabela Vargas comes on. In this Mexican song in Spanish just starts playing when she locks eyes with this like femmy like influencer girl. And you know, for the first time we see Aisha's like walls of toughness just fall, and she turns into like literal mush. And you know, she hates this girl like in concept, but in practice she's a fucking simp, you know.
Hell yeah.
So it was really, really funny to see her, and like it confirmed that that's exactly my type. So this Zarina girl though, that,
oh god,
she turns out to be Miss girl bossing, gatekeeping twat,
and gaslighting the fuck out of them.
Yeah. She uses them at the end to provoke people, you know, and to be clickbait, essentially. Yeah. You know, performative activism, all that. That's this girl. Mm. So even after her and Aisha are kind of a thing, because they've been hanging out and all this stuff and blah, 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 she ends up interviewing the band or whatever, saying she's going to do this great piece on them. And instead she turns, like, this interview that the band thinks is going to be innocent into something like really inciting and challenges them, but not in a good way. Like, she just like makes them out to be, yeah, she tries to push Aisha even to come out publicly, which she's not comfortable with, and like ends up putting words in her mouth and in the other women's mouths when it comes to their identity. And like she ends up painting them as women who are fighting their religion and doing all this stuff when...
Super not.
That's not, like, they are Muslim women.
They're proudly Muslim.
Who happen to be, like, very nuanced and diverse and punk rock, which is all very valid. So she completely misrepresents them, and it goes viral. And they start getting a lot of hate and a lot of criticism from all sides, you know, and probably they would have gotten some of that even if she hadn't written a shitty article. But, like, because they were misrepresented so badly, they aren't just getting it from random people on the street. They're getting it from people in their personal lives, including Amina.
Ooh,
who,
Amina. Yeah.
Yeah, her real-life friends are, like, start calling her a traitor. And, you know, her worst fears are coming through, right? Because she's, this whole time, she's thought she shouldn't be doing this because it's haram. And like, you know, she's been leading this double life and hiding her participation in the band and all this stuff. So it's like now kind of coming to a place where like she needs to like go in or go out. So Syra also doesn't respond well to all of this because people aren't seeing the band for what it is, for what they are, for what they represent. So she ends up getting angry, and she ostracizes.
Not just that, she saw her mom that day and asked to go home, and her mom said no. So that's another fuck. I feel
that's
like
where
that
her
one
anger
maybe
issues
worse.
Come from.
That's kind of worse. Like, your mom says no, you're like, well, shit, my mama don't love me. I'm having a bad day.
Because it's like, yeah, this is all a reminder, right, to all of the women of, like, their position in the world in which they kind of get shit on a lot, which is trash, and people don't want to see them whoever they are, including her own mother. But basically, Syra ends up lashing out on the band, and she ostracizes them all, and it disbands. So she also has anger stemming back to her sister dying like way back in the day, and rejection from her family. And you know, this is, we kind of see like this is why Syra needs her band. They're her found family, much like, you know, queers know very, very well. By the last episode, actually, I kind of felt on this rewatch, I was like, the original vibes that I think I sensed from Amina and Syra, like that obsessive little vibe I was like, this is more about like how they are polar opposites who nevertheless they attract, right? They're kind of like star-crossed.
Yes.
Like Syra has parents and family and a boyfriend who they all want her to be like Amina. They all want her to like push forward in marriage and like very like normal patriarchy shit. Whereas Amina is that person, but she has a closet full of her true desires. Like whereas Syra wears those things. Yeah. Whereas Syra wears those things on her sleeves. They're polar opposites in like a very direct way. So even though you only get this very like light sprinkling of queer Muslim representation with Aisha, you kind of end up getting
a lot
two halves of one big gay coin when it comes to Syra and Amina.
They're in love. I honestly like, do you remember that scene where she took her to like a poetry reading and she not forced her, but she really helped her work through her stage performance anxiety? That's so like, wow, that's so romantic.
Emotional supporty. So
they have a romantically platonic relationship, because I don't think they want to bang, but like if they did, that would be incredible, because they have such good like
they're not gonna, but like
no they're not, because they're that they have to subvert that trope, right? So they're gonna make them friends. Yeah, they have so
but it's like it's so there also, because like god, like Syra sees something in Amina that Amina doesn't see in herself, that no one else sees in Amina. This, like, inner punk rock badass guitar player. She remembers her from fucking elementary school. Like,
come on, that's gay. That's gay.
Like, I think that I literally have that love story somewhere in my life. I don't know.
And then Amina gives Syra a family, and she sees that she needs... Like, she gives her the emotional support that she needs, too.
You
want to
have a sleepover? Are you kidding me right now? Missed opportunities. It was very cute, that family scene.
So
you're
cute.
Right,
like there she was just talking to her family and she was so happy she had a family, and
fit
I was
right
like,
in
this little baby, she just needs a hug.
But the ending ended up being very cute, because after they disbanded they took several weeks off, but the whole time Momtaz, the band manager, she's looking through this shit. She's trying to figure it out. She ends up finding this devout following for the band amongst all the haters. And she decides to throw her own makeshift gig for the band, because, you know, she goes to like her Muslim community, she goes to the punk rock community, and no one's making space for them. So she does it herself. She gets the band back together. She, you know, minus Amina, who has to go through her own coming out. I mean, an acceptance of herself moment.
It's a coming out.
And, but yeah, Amina ends up showing up for, like, a final rendition of We Are the Champions. And it's fucking marvelous. Like, it's a really, really good ending to the show.
And I noticed that, like, they were singing songs by, like, queer, non-white men. Like, System of a Down, like, well, I don't know if he's queer, but he's definitely not a white dude. He's from Armenia.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, System of a Down is not white. He's Armenian. And a lot of
what
he
about
wrote,
that? Is that song that I...
Oh, no, the I would walk 1,000
miles. Is that one
anything?
Is that one white?
I don't know. Let's... You want me to Google that?
I mean, you don't have to.
Okay.
I was excited
to
see
that. I think that's a white
that.
Dude, but that's a good song.
I got, like, How I Met Your Mother flashbacks. So I was very excited.
But yeah, no, like, but I did notice that they put System of a Down on, they sang Queen, and I thought, like, I was like, that's pretty cool. Like, they're deep diving into things that are, like, non-white and really, like, hardcore. Like, System of a Down is very political and non-white, and, you know, well, Queen is Queen. Like, they're the best,
Queen,
one of the best bands ever. We don't have to even, there's nothing, no, they're just amazing.
No.
But, but, like, I really, really love this fucking show. Like, I stand by my idea that the UK and Channel 4 specifically, no one's touching them as far as, like, 30-minute sitcoms or 30-minute, like, dramedies. Like, shows that it can both be funny and, like, heartwarming and deep. Like, no one's touching them. It's like K-dramas. Like, novelas, like, unless they're Mexican or Korean, no one's touching you, right? Like, you are that bitch. Just like... fucking the UK is that bitch when it comes to these like 30-minute segments on like making a dramedy. Like, no one's touching them. You're like, they're the best, most creative, interesting storytellers right now in TV. America's not doing it like them, because they actually giving you interesting stories, and they've been doing this for years. Like, the UK has been
the US
fucking it up.
It's, the U.S. thinks it's, like, the ultimate melting pot. Like, no, bro. UK's been, like, having, like,
the best shows, kinds
of people, like, coming from all walks of life. Like, and they've been putting them in their shows.
Trigonometry, this show. I remember This Is England back in the day. It was like, whoa.
Even, like, fucking Skins? Misfits.
What is it called? Fresh Meat was amazing about the college experience.
Chewing gum?
Like,
yeah.
Like, no one's touching you. You're that bitch. Like, the only people... Like, America's just putting out really good music. No one can touch America as far as, like, all culture and music. That's their export. But the UK, no. The America, you're just not doing it. Like, you keep giving us, like, the same trash and then using it again. Like, vomiting it back to us. Like, we know what it is. We don't want it.
Yeah,
like,
we watch Gossip Girl.
See, like, come on. Even I watched part of it and then I just gave up. Because I was like, okay, it's not giving what it's supposed to give. So, goodbye. No, but, not. Like,
it didn't.
It never did. And, like... Dramas? So like, no, zero. I'm going to watch a K-drama or a novella, like, where there's lesbians really doing things, like, that I didn't think they would be doing. Anyways.
Yeah, zero cafecitos for this show. I thought it was brilliant. Obviously, I wanted to see more of Aisha, but this is 6 episodes. It's a very quick watch. There's not a whole lot of time for stuff, you know. So I kind of get it. I really, really hope that they invest in another season, because I think... there's more to give. As much as, like, this is very complete, it's a complete show, there's no, like, cliffhangers, and you get a lot. It did give what it needed to have gave. But it but I want more. So
yeah, no, I mean, we'll see. If not, then maybe it'll get renewed in the UK on Channel 4, and, you know, we'll find a way. If there's a will, there's a way. Okay,
there is a will.
And we got the will, because that shit's amazing. And I actually really don't ship straight people, but, like, I was okay with Amina and Asan, because they're kind of, like, she's funny. She's very, like, basing all her romance off movies, and I thought that was another adorable layer to her. She's so likable. Amina's the best.
Yeah, I liked Amina a lot. Asan was, like, if you're going to have a straight guy in something, have Asan. Asan was pretty cool. I mean, Aisha's brother, of course, he's not going to suck.
No, he's not. He's great. And good hair, you know? He has good hair. That's my critique of men. He looks clean, and he has good hair. There we go. But yeah, right, so...
Well, let's do some Patreon shout-outs real quick. You first, ma'am.
All right, so shout-out to all the Patreon supporters. Shout-out Alex. Shout-out Jessica. Shout-out Joe. Shout-out Marisa. Shout-out Valerie. Was good. Shout out Kiki's. Shout out Michelle. Rosaldo was good. Shout out to our brother Veto. Chrissy, I haven't seen you post about your animals lately. I hope you're okay. Marimad, I know you're getting off Instagram for a little while, so I totally understand. But miss you. I hope you're doing good. Rasi, and if y'all don't know about Rasi, y'all need to find out. Go support Shit You Don't Care About podcast, and go make sure to buy candy from Kepika Candy. We literally love them, and they make the best fucking candy ever on earth. Only buy from them, okay? If you're gonna buy some candy, some fruit gushers, some fucking chili worms. Gushers, chili worms, you need to get them from Kepika Candy. And shout out to R. I actually have your chart, so maybe we can do, like, a separate episode just where I read your chart. But yeah, shout out to the Patreon supporters. We love y'all. We couldn't do this without y'all. We are self-made, self-produced. Mytha does the fucking editing and the producing. Give us our coins, please. Thank you so much. We're not like these other bitches who got, like, 5 people on a team. We are the team. So thank you so much for helping 2 bitches do some shit. Like, y'all are the best.
Grazie to also the Cafecito gang, which is an Arcoiris gang. Emmanuel, what's good? Sarah, thank you for supporting. Margarita, kind of new too to the Patreon, so thank you for coming in. Favi, our padrino. Baby Dojo Negoro, thank you for silently supporting us wherever you are. Shout out to Sulema, shout out to Mari, the homie. Shout out to Chris, Mireya, who's always decked out in our merch.
Hell yeah.
Shout out to Noel, our favorite book talker, and to Alicia, who is our favorite Australian ever, and to Edith. Thank you all for supporting us. That's at patreon.com/CYC podcast. You know, our last episode was actually kind of like fun. It was a good episode.
It was like it was almost like a regular episode.
Yeah, honestly, like it was pretty long too. I'm like, maybe we can even post it one day. I don't know. That shit was kind of fun. We talked a lot about like our feelings on marriage and weddings and stuff like that. So, yeah, go check it out. It's a good fucking episode. I've actually made that available even to our $1 Patreons. So if you guys want to join it, you'll be able to listen to at least that episode.
We have a backlog. That was like a fun
2 years. 2 year long worth of Patreon episodes for you guys to listen to, so check it out.
Dang, I've lost track.
Maybe even more. I don't know. It's been a long time. But also we have merch, which is linked in our bios and on our website and on probably on the description of this episode. And you can just follow us at CYC Podcast on Twitter and Instagram, or I think we're even on Facebook. If you guys don't fucking know, I'm Maite Panda on Twitter and Instagram.
I'm the cabrona, I'm the fried papita, and y'all can follow me on Twitter. I'm fried papita on Twitter, and I'm the cabrona, so in case you don't know.
All right, guys, bye, and thank you for listening to an episode and for being patient with us as we slowly post. We have some good stuff coming up for you soon, though.
Yeah, no, we've been doing a lot of planning, so it's coming for you, and we're making it pop even during the pandemic. So shout out to y'all, shout out to the listeners. Y'all be good, y'all be safe, please.
You're all right, bye.